Is Haaland ready to haul against Bournemouth? Will there be pain without Kane? And why we all need to stay calm ahead of FPL Game Week 2. Well, 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 Game Week 1 did not disappoint, did it? Hello and welcome back to your second weekly dose of podcast action from the Premier League. We hope you enjoyed the debut Off the Bench podcast with Lee Bonfield and Gianni Battiste on Monday. They reacted to everything that happened in Game Week 1. Now myself, Kelly Summers, Sam Bonfield and Julian Laurens are back with the FPL pod to look ahead to Game Week 2. And this week, we also have the man we call the GOAT of FPL from FPL Black Box. It's Mark Southerns. Mark, how was game week one? And let's just get this out of the way. Game week one with no Mo Salah.
Yes, thank you very much. And the results of going no Salah is a pretty miserable game week, which probably a lot of people could have told me. Disappointing, 51 points. I wasn't particularly happy with that. I think I can claim I was unlucky. Spurs won 4-1. I had Son and Kane and got one assist. How often does that happen? But there you go. I'm struggling from the off, but I'm sure there's plenty of time to claw it back.
There is just one game week, 37 game weeks still to go. Also, I was at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, as I said on last week's pod, and I just couldn't believe quite what I was seeing. So as Kane owners, we're all Kane owners on the pod, we all had the same problem. Jules, hello to you. Firstly, let's get this out of the way. Somehow, you are the highest scoring person on this week's show.
Why have you told him this, Kelly?
Not surprising at all, I would say. My Erling Haaland pick at the last minute, literally, I took my little one, my youngest one, to see... This is Super League of Pets or Super Pets, whatever. I usually fall asleep when I'm watching them. But every time I was watching the screen, I could see Erling Haaland's face saying like, pick me, Jules, pick me, pick me. So I changed everything literally the last minute to bring him in the team. And I was very happy when he scored against West Ham. I had a feeling he was gone.
Did you have Harry Kane, Jules?
Yeah, did you go without him?
I kept Kane.
You kept Kane? Salah.
How did you fit them both in?
Kane, Jesus, and Haaland. Then the rest is like players like Mark Southerns and me and Kelly and Sam, basically.
Yeah, he'll struggle now. He won't have a good week this time. He can't keep doing that. You got Jesus, Kane, and Haaland up front.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I felt
and
I was
he's
unlucky
got Mo Salah.
Because and Mo Salah, of course. Yeah, but I mean, the thing is I had the feeling that Haaland would score. I thought Kane would do well, and I think Jesus was a bit unlucky as well. But the problem is he unbalances your team massively. But I'm happy with the 67 points, which is, again, you know, more than all of you here.
it's going to be a long podcast, this.
Come on, Sam, let's move on. Let's talk about your game week and what you learned from it, because my game week was frustrating. I know we've spoken since, and I think you kind of felt the same.
Yeah, it was one of those game weeks, wasn't it? I think sometimes, and let's caveat this with, normally my game week one scores are terrible. I don't seem to be able to get game week one right. And I think in part that's because I often think slightly more longer term with my team. I'm kind of looking beyond these fixtures and what the team might look like over maybe the first 3, 4, 5 game weeks of the season. So sometimes that means that the team aren't necessarily fully focus in on game week one and being the best team they can. Having said that, I really did think that this team were going to do well in game week one. And there were a lot of players, you know, take Kane, for example, we've just spoken about him already. How often is it that Spurs score 4 goals and Kane gets absolutely nothing? I mean, that very, very rarely happens. I was really shocked by Aston Villa, really expected better from them going into this week. And there were just a number of players, you know, I got unlucky a bit with Luis Diaz. He probably should have returned in that first half. And didn't. And then, of course, the Liverpool defence just didn't go well either. So a lot of lessons learned. But I also think that it's one of those moments where you can't just throw away a whole pre-season's worth of planning because one game week didn't go well. You have to kind of stick faith with the players that you've got. Don't panic and move on knowing that you picked them for a reason.
There will be managers panicking, Mark. There'll probably be a lot of new managers who maybe are playing the game for the very first time and they're looking at their game week one score and they are thinking, that is just not enough to set me up for the season. What would you say to them? Would you advocate a wild card or would you just say stay calm?
I think you've got to stay calm. I mean, we know the least at this point. One game week in, we've seen tactical tweaks from both Liverpool and City, I think, to accommodate Haaland and Darwin. And we need a few more weeks to see how that shakes out. And all the teams are going through some level of transition. There's new players coming in as well with the transfer window still open. So I think the time for the wild card and the rehash is, you know, 4 or 5 game weeks away yet. So just hold firm. You pick your 15 with, you know, knowing that they were good players. Keep faith with them. Obviously, make sure you have a big player to captain for the future game week. So you've got to have Haaland or Salah, I think, for this game week, for example. But just keep faith because there's such a long way to go and there's still a lot of change to come too.
Yeah, though, don't forget, if you are really unhappy with your team, it's a bit of a different season this year, isn't it? Because we have the 2 wild cards, plus we also have unlimited transfers during the World Cup. That said, I think the message from everyone is just stay calm. Let's anyway take a look at what Game Week 2 has in store, when, of course, we can put all the wrongs from Game Week 1 right, and we won't even be thinking about all of those missed points in Game Week 1 very soon. One of the most intriguing fixtures this weekend, from an FPL point of view and a Premier League point of view, Spurs versus Chelsea. Obviously, Sam, this week, one of the big moves is people getting rid of Harry Kane to bring in Erling Haaland. You've made the transfer, haven't you? I've made the transfer. Could they regret it?
Probably, yeah. I think it's one of those transfers that I did. I broke the cardinal rule, or my cardinal rule of FPL, on Sunday evening and did the Haaland to Kane move, mostly because I felt like...
I can't believe you did that. Yeah, I cannot
Jules. Like, can you imagine how much this hurt me?
And him.
Jules,
when he realises...
if you hadn't got Harry Kane and Erling Haaland, if you'd gone with your original model and didn't have Haaland, would you not have made that transfer too this week?
I would have kept faith in Kane because I still think he can return against Chelsea even away. But I would have found a way of bringing Haaland and trying to keep Kane as well. But it's costly. It's a lot of changes.
The problem is with getting Kane as well as Haaland, if you haven't already set your team up in that way, is it's probably going to cost you at least a -4, probably more likely a -8. And then you have to consider how likely is it that Kane is going to score multiple goals against Chelsea, because by taking a hit like that, you kind of have to be certain that he's, you know, going to blank or that he's only going to get one. And I agree with you. I think Kane could easily return this week. The issue is that the fixture's much harder. Haaland's got Bournemouth, which on paper is one of the easiest games that he could have going into this game week. He's on great form. City were looking for him. That's only going to have increased over a week's worth of training that they're going to have together this week. And I think, you know, we saw from Kulusevski a hell of a lot in game week one of really good quality finishing, great movement. And he's significantly cheaper than Son and Kane. So in my mind, the moving Kane on, whilst really painful for me, as you can imagine, was made slightly easier in the knowledge that it's very easy for me to get to Kulusevski next week and then have Spurs attacking players in there ahead of game week 3.
Yeah, Kulusevski's an interesting one, isn't he, Mark? Because we all talked pre-season about who's going to be the best 8 million midfielder. And I would say that he won the battle in game week 1. Do you think that's fair?
I think it is fair. And I seem to remember Fest telling you to get Kulusevski in. You took no notice. So there you go. I got that one right.
I didn't get him in my own team.
I've got Saka and Diaz. And I had Son and Kane. So I expected to be covered for that Spurs victory, but I wasn't. So I go into game week 2 with Son and Kane. I knew I was always going to get rid of one to get a City player in for the Bournemouth game. And I've chosen to also go Kane to Haaland. Sam, have I gone right there? Am I right to keep Son over Kane?
Yeah, that's what I would have done 100%. I think, you know, when you look at the way that Spurs played, and obviously Kelly was there, but Kane was a lot deeper, doing fantastic things. And as a Spurs fan watching him, I was like, you are creating so much space. The movement is fantastic. The balls that you're putting in are brilliant. I thought he had a fantastic game. But from an FPL perspective, it was definitely Kulusevski, the wing backs. And then if you do want one of those premiums, Son, that would be my preferred route into Spurs.
What I would say about Kulusevski is that he was up against Gineppo, who obviously isn't a wing back for Southampton. Mm. So I think he had a bit of a field day because he was up against someone not used to playing in that position. So totally. It's difficult to judge it on that performance. We'll see how he does at Stamford Bridge, of course.
What I will say is that when you look at Kulusevski's underlying stats since he joined the Premier League, he's assisted 9 goals since February. That's the most of any player in the Premier League. And in fact, only Dembele has assisted more across the whole of the top 5 leagues in European football. And then when you look at him in terms of attacking returns, only Son and Kane have had more than him across the Premier League since his debut in February. So the underlying stats massively support that he will continue to have a good season for Spurs.
It's interesting. Kulusevski feels like he's becoming one of the most popular options at Spurs, and we've wanted a cheaper attacking option at Spurs, haven't we, for quite some time. Kane has had almost 700,000 transfers out. He's the most transferred out player of the game week so far, something that we very rarely say. In fact, Spurs make three of the top four most transferred out players. So people being very quick to react on that. How do you think they'll fare this weekend then against Chelsea, Jules? Because that fixture will likely be another reason that people will think, well, Harry Kane isn't going to score. I don't think we can say that about any fixture when it comes to Harry Kane, can we?
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, remember last season, they didn't score any in their four games against Chelsea, didn't score any goals at all. They lost three and drawn one 0-0. They were tough games, even when Conte arrived. I think they're going to park the bus, honestly. I think Conte would be very happy with a 0-0 draw, for example, and try just to hit them on the counter. That's why I'm very reluctant to sell Kane or to sell Son that I don't have, but because I think, and Kulusevski, they will be the only three players, I think, that will attack at Stamford Bridge on Sunday. But that could be enough for Spurs to score a goal. But I think they will be very solid. They won't want to concede. They will play really deep, which I think will frustrate Chelsea. And I can easily see a 0-0 draw coming up. So even if you have Chelsea defensive assets, I don't think that's too much of a problem because I think they will have a lot of the ball. And yes, of course, they can always concede a goal to Kane or Son or Kulusevski. But I think it will be quite a old school attack v defense kind of game that can easily finish in a 0-0 draw.
So is the defense the best place to look for this game? Because Chelsea did get defensive returns in game week one, the likes of Reece James, Ben Chilwell, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that's a defense in transition with Koulibaly coming in. They've lost Rudiger, of course. Azpilicueta played with Thiago at Goodison Park. I think there could be some concern with a lack of pace. So it could be that Reece James could slot into right centre-back against Spurs to try and kind of counter Son's threat on the break. So that'll be worth watching. I mean, if you're considering Reece James, bear that in mind, that he was wing-back at Goodison Park. He might be right centre-back with perhaps maybe Pulisic at right wing-back against Spurs. We'll have to see. As I said, you know, a lot of teams in transition, and Chelsea are one of those, that the defence is changing up. They've lost Rudiger, who is key. So I think it's quite early to make any assumptions as yet. But over the season, Reece James is a great pick, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's the most heavily owned Chelsea player in the game right now. But he was also the most creative defender in game week one. He is top of the ICT index for creativity. So I think you're right, Mark. Against Spurs, we could see him playing in a different position to compensate for what Spurs might do. They're going to have a lot more attacking players on the pitch than Everton did in game week one, that's for sure. But I do think long-term Reece James remains a good pick, particularly in that wing-back position.
Is he even more appealing over Ben Chilwell now because Cucurella's come in from Brighton? He got some minutes in game week one. So Chilwell's position, or minutes at least, could be under threat, Jules.
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll be big competition between them two for that left wing-back position, although Cucurella can also play as the left side centre back if you want in the 3-2. So it'd be interesting. I think James is a starter 100%, whether it's a right wing back or right side centre back. But for Chilwell and Cucurella, I think, yeah, there's a bit more Tuchel can pick depending on the opposition, depending on the form that you see, and also just rotate to avoid Chilwell being injured. For example, we know he's a bit more fragile, for example, than a Reece James, even if Reece James also had injuries last season. So I think if I had to pick between the two, I would certainly go Reece James.
Before we move on, Sam, just a quick word on the Spurs wing-backs. We touched upon transferred out players. We briefly mentioned Perisic. Of course, he didn't start. Ryan Sessegnon did. I thought that he was electric against Kyle Walker-Peters. The battle they had last Saturday was fascinating, and he was certainly getting forward. How do we feel about the Spurs wing-backs, and who's going to kind of be starting in those positions that we should maybe be looking at in FPL?
Well, I think the good thing about playing Chelsea in game week two is that you're probably not going to invest in a Spurs defender this week. So you do get another week's worth of game time to kind of decide who's better. It seems at the moment that Doherty's the preferred on the other side. So I would expect to see him once fully fit and available. But Sessegnon, I think, played his way back into that position with the way that he performed in game week one. I think it was Perisic's place when fit, but the way that Sessegnon was in game week one makes me think actually Conte will probably stay loyal to him. Conte made some really interesting comments about how, you know, you don't just throw all your new signings in there straight away, because this is a team that he trusts, that he got him Champions League football last season, that turned the season around when he arrived. So I think Sessegnon, with the performance that he put in, he was unlucky not to score another goal, which he had taken away for offside. So it could have been an even bigger haul than he did get. And had Spurs defended properly for that early goal, we could have seen a clean sheet there too. I think Sessegnon is going to be probably needing to be displaced by Perisic, and he'll probably start the next few games, I think.
Yeah, one thing to look for is there's a midweek set of matches between game weeks 4 and 5, and that looks the prime place where perhaps Spurs will rotate and then Perisic will get his start in game week 5, maybe. It would be harsh to drop Sessegnon after that performance. I think he'll play at Chelsea, but I think the tipping point could be that midweek game week 5, when Perisic gets the first start. And then once he's in, you've got to think he's got the quality to keep the place.
Okay, so we've discussed quite a few players there, and it seems like this game against Chelsea is maybe the opportunity to look at Spurs' assets, and maybe the same with Chelsea as well. Just another week. Don't maybe invest this week, but see how they get on this week. Would you say that's the message, Jules? Maybe this is just another opportunity to look at them.
Yeah, for example, if you like Raheem Sterling, I think you should wait a little bit more to see if he plays again a bit centrally like he did against Everton, which I didn't think suited him. Well, I think he needs a bit of time for him and Havertz to work well with each other, to understand each other, even for Raheem himself to get used to that new position. Or if Tuchel changes and play him sort of as a, you know, behind the striker, but more wider, like we saw in the second half against Everton, where I think he's more at ease because this is where he's been playing all his life. So maybe wait a little bit because it's a tricky game as well. Because if Spurs really park the bus and defend really, really well, there might not be much from Chelsea attacking returns. So wait a little bit and then see for game week 3.
I tell you what, it scares me if all of a sudden Raheem Sterling becomes on our FPL radar. So many premiums to fit into our team. It feels like there's enough of them already, Mark. How would you say, when you reflect on game week 1 in the premiums, I'm talking your Haalands, your Salahs, Nunes, Son, KDB, they all returned. What are the takeaways in terms of the standout premiums going into game week 2?
Well, I mean, Haaland has announced himself, hasn't he, with the 2 goals at West Ham. I think that was pretty chilling to see how he just excelled in that game. And you know, the suspicion is he's going to rip up the Premier League and be an absolute key asset in FBL. Personally, I'm too worried to doubt that. I think I want him in the team and I don't want to take that risk without him. I have gone on no Salah. And the reason behind that is because Liverpool are changing. You know, Nunes and incorporating a number 9 in that Liverpool attack could mean that they change up tactically. And I saw at Fulham, you know, Salah was occupied wide a lot of the game. Yes, he got the goal and assist, but he only got that when Liverpool, you know, were chasing the game when they were behind. And how often is that going to be the case? I think, you know, I'm going to be watching the Palace game. What I saw from that game, Salah could be out wide more and be there to provide service for Nunes, which is what he did at Craven Cottage. So I'm okay with having Son, because Son had 4 shots in the box. He created 4 chances. He was very lively. So it's really interesting to see how Son and Salah are going to compare over the season. When you consider if you don't have Salah, you can get an extra Liverpool player and you've got Diaz and Nunes in the equation. So for me, the heavy hitters of priority is Haaland. And then, you know, it's still up in the air with the others. I think De Bruyne, Salah, Son, at the moment, I can't separate them. But I'm sure, you know, 2 or 3 weeks' time, it's most likely that Salah will emerge as essential again.
Listening to Gianni and Lee on off the bench on Monday was really interesting, because obviously as a Liverpool fan, Lee was talking quite a lot about the way that Liverpool might change when Nunez is properly part of that team and regularly starting. And he kind of shares your view, Mark, that actually Salah's game will be impacted by Nunez arriving. So I think I'm not prepared to be in a situation where I haven't got Salah versus Crystal Palace. He, you know, I reeled off a load of stats last week about his record in game week 1. His record in game week 2 is just as impressive, averaging over 10 points per match against them in recent times. So at the moment, I feel like he, alongside Haaland, is essential. But I am watching quite closely, because when that wildcard window comes into view, probably in and around game week 5, if Nunez is regularly starting and we are seeing this shift in the way that Liverpool play, like we're kind of anticipating might happen, I can see there being a movement of FPL managers from Salah over to Nunez.
And even before Darwin came on against Fulham, that first half from Salah and from Liverpool overall in general, and they won't be as bad as that every week, was terrible. You know, he had nothing. Mm. He had literally nothing. I think he touched the ball once, maybe in their box or something like that, in 45 minutes. And this is Mo Salah against a promoted side. So as good as they were against City in the Community Shield, and we were all quite excited, that Fulham game, should that? Maybe they're just not ready yet.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they react. It does feel hard to kind of part company with any of them going into a Crystal Palace fixture, though, doesn't it? Let's focus in a little bit more on Man City versus Bournemouth and Haaland specifically. It feels like he's becoming almost essential. The fact that three of the four of us have made the transfer and four out of four of us are going to have him going into game week two. Can you cover him, Mark, by having a Kevin De Bruyne or by going a little bit cheaper and looking at one of their other midfielders potentially, do you think?
I think after one game, it's difficult to say. I think we saw the change of system at West Ham. You saw the two number eights pushed up, the fullbacks inverted into midfield. It all looked like it was set up to create space for Haaland. And that is why I've got straight on the Norwegian, because I think City are setting up to get Haaland space, to exploit the fact he's a world-class finisher. And if they're going to, you know, form their tactics around that, then you've got to think he's going to be the top scoring player in that team. De Bruyne has got a key part to play, though. We saw him link up with Haaland for the second goal. He could keep pace with him, given that he gets the extra points for goals and clean sheets. But I think it's very, very risky to go against Haaland with your choice. So I think if you can get to Haaland, do that, but keep De Bruyne in mind over the long term and watch how it shakes out.
God, it felt awful, didn't it, watching Haaland play on Sunday, not owning him. It was one of those matches where I was like, I need a bigger sofa to hide behind here, because this guy looked like he was going to score every time he got the ball near the goal. So I'm not sure that anybody covers it, because watching Manchester City in the past, I've always watched their midfielders. And likewise on Sunday against West Ham, there was no midfielder that really, apart from Kevin De Bruyne, that's really stood out. And I thought, yes, like Foden or Grealish, or they've had a fantastic game and I must own them. But with Haaland, it was very much I need to find a way to get this guy in my team, even if that means making the ultimate sacrifice, that is selling Harry Kane in order to fund it. So I don't know. I think for me, Kevin De Bruyne is obviously a fantastic pick. He is obviously a player that has Premier League experience and is made a better player by having a proper number nine in Haaland ahead of him. But I would still prioritise Haaland as a transfer in, and I wouldn't try to compromise or save some money or shift budget around, rather, by having KDB instead.
I feel like I've spoken about KDB as if he's cheap. He's actually 0.4 million more than Haaland. So you're not really going to save any budget. So I guess it's more of a question of, if you've got that money, is it better invested in Haaland? And I feel like the resounding answer is yes. What did you make of the likes of Phil Foden, Jack Grealish and co, Jules? Any other options in there? We talked already about Kulusevski winning the battle of the 8 million midfielders. Did anyone else from City put their hand up for inclusion in our teams?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Sam and I talked about Grealish at the, you know, in the preseason before the season started, because we felt that he could have a big impact this season and could have a good season. He would have to release the ball quicker. I think I agree with Mark completely. In the way City set up, was definitely to make Haaland shine and to get him the service that he didn't get, for example, at the Community Shield the week before. But to get Haaland the right service, Jack Grealish will have to change a little bit his game as well and to improve and to be more clinical in what he does with the ball, whether that's, you know, passing, but even dribbling, but can't hold on the ball too long. And that's what worked so well with KDB on the second goal, for example. And that's what worked very well through the game with Erling Haaland and the link up between him and the other players. So for Grealish, I was a bit disappointed, I have to say, in the two games that we saw already, Community Shield and Game Week 1. I think Foden has the talent and the ability to do what De Bruyne did on the second goal, and that link up and that relationship with Haaland. And for Riyad Mahrez, I think being on the bench for that game against West Ham is a sign of maybe not great things to come for him, although there will be rotations and stuff like that. But yeah, I would go Foden. I think Foden can strike a really good partnership with Haaland as well, a bit like KDB.
I do agree on the Foden pick, but I think that Mahrez benching was a warning sign to all of us as FPL managers that this can and will happen over the course of the season with Pep. He will bench Mahrez, he will bench Grealish, he will change the formation depending upon the way that he wants his Manchester City team to play and the opposition that he's coming up against. So Foden, I agree, I thought he had the best game of the ones that are in that kind of 8 million bracket for City, but the threat of rotation and the potentially better the better investment options that you have available at City means I'd be spending the budget there and saving it and spending the slightly cheaper, more mid-priced midfielder bracket elsewhere on the likes of Kulusevski at Spurs.
Mark, for this fixture this weekend, let's not forget Bournemouth actually won in game week one, but a lot of people were already earmarking this fixture this weekend for Manchester City. Do we have to triple up? How many City players have you got going into this?
I'll be taking three. I've got Walker, Cancelo and Haaland. I think, you know, while we're all fearing the Haaland goals, I think we're also expecting a clean sheet for City. So I'm happy having Walker and Cancelo there. They're not going to be providing any width from based on what we saw at West Ham. So I'm actually debating whether Cancelo over the season is going to be a necessary pick, because going out wide, I was hoping he was going to provide service into Haaland. That doesn't look like that's going to be the case. He's going to spend a lot of time in midfield. So he may not be the kind of offering the attacking potential that he showed last season. But I'm happy for now holding the two City defenders. And I think Haaland is enough. I think it's very difficult to make a pick amongst the Foden, Grealish, Mahrez pack. They're playing wide and the emphasis is on getting service to Haaland. So I don't think there's any rush to try and find another attacking option in that City side. Because as you said, De Bruyne is costly and that means a lot of surgery on our teams to get him in.
I was with you on the deadline, wasn't I, Mark? We were at Fantasy Fest and I made a transfer with what? 20 seconds to go of the deadline. I think I got your trusty friend as I panicked. But I panicked with this fixture in mind because I had Cancelo. I didn't have Haaland at that point, but I always had in my head that I was probably going to be doing Kane to Haaland, which I did. I actually brought in Kyle Walker. One of the mistakes I did make was that I left it so late, I didn't get him into my starting 11 for last week. So there was six points. Was it 6 points I think he got? Yeah, that was stuck on the bench. But I've got him for this week, so I'm going in with the same three. What about you guys? Jules, Sam, are you going into this fixture with three?
I've got Walker and Haaland, so I keep two City players.
How did you feel about Cancelo, Jules? I know the jury was out in pre-season. I forgot to ask for an update on that.
Yeah, the number seven still bothers me massively. I was at West Ham and I kept seeing Cristiano Ronaldo or Eric Cantona and I was like, Joao Cancelo, no, I don't think so. So until he changes his number, he can't be my team. No, I'm kidding. It's not just about the number. But Mark made a great point. He's going to play alongside Rodri in midfield all season, I think. Or certainly as long as Haaland is in the team. And I think that will make him less of a threat going forward with the ball for City.
He's just a bonus points magnet as well, isn't he? He got two bonus once again. Sam, sorry, I interrupted them because I felt like the listeners needed to know if Jules had been persuaded that number seven shirt looked good on Cancelo.
I mean, I thought it looked very good on Cancelo, so I'm really happy to own him. I have three. I have Edison, Cancelo and now Haaland. So actually, I did really well out of the bonus point system in the game last weekend because Edison also picked up a bonus point. So pleased with those two. And I do feel like, coming out of that game on Sunday, he said to me, do you regret going with Edison over Walker because you could have saved yourself 0.5 million? But actually, I think longer term, I prefer having Edison. I really liked what I saw from him and stability is really important in terms of my goalkeeper strategy. And I like the fact that I've just got Edison sat there and I don't need to worry about him anymore.
Yeah, Edison is nice. I would have liked to have had him, but I went with the Leicester goalkeepers and I'm now frantically refreshing every day on social media when I wake up to check that they haven't signed another goalkeeper. We've spoken there about quite a few premiums that we're all trying to squeeze into our teams. And gosh, we could even potentially be looking at Raheem Sterling if Jules is correct and he keeps playing through the middle for Chelsea. But that does mean that we also need some budget picks. We spoke about them in pre-season. And Sam, I think we have to start with Aston Villa because you picked out some really nice options for Steven Gerrard side, but it was a really disappointing opening weekend for them.
Just did not see this one coming at all. For me, this was the surprise of game week one. I really expected Aston Villa to get off to a good start. It was away at Bournemouth. Yes, I wasn't expecting Bournemouth to be as good as they were. And let's not take anything away from Bournemouth. It wasn't just that Villa were poor. Bournemouth were excellent in game week one. And I think they kind of made us all stand up and go, oh, maybe there's some assets over there that I should look at that I've kind of avoided in pre-season. But from a Villa perspective, it wasn't necessarily the team that we were expecting. No Watkins in the starting 11. And players like Matt Cash and Leon Bailey, who had been very highly selected in pre-season, and I own both of them, just didn't really turn up. Now, when you look at the underlying stats for that game, it was Matt Cash who was the most advanced player in the Aston Villa team. He had 66 touches in the opponent's half, more than any other Villa player. And he received 26 passes in the final third, again, more than any other Villa player. Now, as a Matt Cash owner, obviously, I'm delighted about that because it means he's in the right places. But it's also slightly worrying that their most advanced player is one of their defenders and they aren't getting enough service to those forward players. So it'll be interesting to see what Gerrard does. I'm not panicking on Villa because they are still nice, cheap budget options. I still think Leon Bailey and Matt Cash could be good picks moving forward. But I am definitely watching what happens with them in their first home fixture of the season in game week two. If they don't perform again, those players could start to come under scrutiny because there were some other fantastic budget picks who did really well this week.
Yeah, there was, wasn't there? It's going to be interesting because Everton at home for them, they'll have to be targeting 3 points in that one. And I kind of look at it and I was asked for a prediction on this one the other day and I wouldn't know which way, who's going to come out on top in this because it's two teams very much in transition, isn't it, Jules?
Yeah, it is. Although I think Villa at home, I think Steven Gerrard would have shouted really, really loud after that defeat at Bournemouth. And you would expect a reaction massively from Villa, especially for their first home game of the season. And I think for Everton, they will struggle at Villa as well. I think they might struggle all season, to be fair. What we saw against Chelsea was not... I know they don't have a striker, but nothing special. Even with the new signings, with Onana and more will come, I still think it's difficult for them. So I would expect Cash, Bailey, even Ings and Watkins, whoever you own from Villa, to be much, much better this weekend, to have a really good reaction, to get points, clean sheets. I mean, there's the Tyrone Mings issue, but I expect a big reaction from Villa and much, much better performance. And then they've got Palace and West Ham before it gets harder with Arsenal and City. So you would expect them to be good for the next three games for sure.
Well, Mark, Jules needs the budget players to perform because he's got a fair few of them in there to fit around his premium picks.
He must have.
He's manifesting, isn't he, that they do well because he needs them to. Otherwise, he's going to literally have a four-player team, I think, of his premiums. Any other budget players that you've kind of got on your radar, Mark, or that you think could be good for this week and going forward?
Yeah, I mean, Andres Pereira, I think I went for a 4-4-2 and I went Pereira as a budget pick in midfield. And after about 10 minutes, I was like, yeah, I'm pleased I did that because I think he really stood out in that Fulham performance. He was playing in the number 10 role, vacated by Carvalho's move to Liverpool, and he was integral to everything they did. Mitrovic was obviously key, but Andreas buzzing around him was really eye-catching. He was on set pieces as well, and that's always great. So as a 4-5 option, that's everything you want. You know, he's an attacking player, taking set pieces. When you need to call him off the bench, he's going to offer you the potential for some attacking points, and that's all we can ask. Elsewhere, Jota Silva got his goal off the bench. He was someone touted as a possibility as a 4-5 midfielder. He had a very good season in the Championship promotion run. Injured a lot last season, obviously caught the eye of a fantastic goal. I think the problem there is Dansgaard's come in the last few days for Brentford and we'd expect him to work his way into the side in the number 10 role. So is there a place for De Silva? If we see him break into the starting 11, I think we've got two excellent 4-5 midfielders that are going to be difficult to resist, to be honest.
You know, the thing maybe this season that will be very exciting, and it's only one game, so we need to wait a little bit, but there might not be bad teams this season in the Premier League. You know, last season you wouldn't have nowhere near, no offense to Norwich, but Norwich player, that kind of stuff. Now you look at Fulham, you look at Bournemouth and Forest that Mark knows really well, and they will be better once the new signings have all gelled in and I think the team is ready and they all kind of know each other. And you look at those teams and there's players there that will do well. Those three teams will do well. And I think that changes the game a little bit because before there are teams that you would not have picked any players from them. Now I think it's a bit different because there might not be any bad teams at all this season in the Premier League.
And when we have a little look at the 4.0 defenders, those are the ones that we look for, right? We go into game week one and we're trying to pick out who is going to be our 4.0 million defender of choice. And we had two playing in game week one that I thought were both really nice options. Obviously, there was Williams at Forest who, yes, all right, he didn't return points, but he played really well in that game. And when you watch the game, he was attacking, he was in good positions. So don't be put off by the fact that they conceded a couple and he didn't get any points. He could still return at points over the course of this season. And actually, I thought Forest defended really well for a large chunk of that game against Newcastle and they really, really frustrated. On the flip of that, you also had Nathan Patterson at Everton, who we were talking about in pre-season and Jules was waxing lyrical about on a podcast a couple of weeks back. He was excellent as well. And whilst Everton had no real attacking threat in that game, they defended well, actually, against Chelsea. And it took a penalty to take away that clean sheet. So I won't panic about him either. I think both of them. And if you do want to go with a team like Jules's, where it's full of all of these star
superstars,
premiums.
Superstars, you mean, yeah, yeah. Superstars.
Yeah, exactly. Superstar Jules's team. Then you're going to need these budget picks. And those two 4.0 defenders are perfect for that because they're playing, well, they seem to be. Anyway, let's see if they start game week two. But I'm expecting both of them to play regularly.
Jules, Sam, I know we always say we have to be nice to our guests that come on, but you two are sucking up a bit too much to Nottingham Forest there. For people that are listening to this that maybe don't know, Mark is a Forest fan, a long-suffering Forest fan. What are you going to say, Jules?
No, just that Mark had a rubbish week at FPL. Then Forest lost as well. We just wanted to be nice to him. He's in his shed.
Bring me on.
You know,
Bring me on.
It's a Thursday morning.
Yeah, outrageous.
Mark, let's just have a little stock check, though, on Forest, because people will look at that result at Newcastle on the face of it and say, newly promoted team, oh, what's the hype about? They're not going to be very good. You've got Brennan Johnson in your team. You nearly persuaded me at the deadline to bring him in. Alas, I saw sense. But how are you feeling about Forest from an FPL point of view, using your head over your heart? If you can.
Again, I'd like to point out, Kelly, I did say get Mitrovic, but you know, don't worry, you know, it's fine. But yeah,
again,
I couldn't afford
Mitrovic.
Again,
you didn't bring him in, though. Yeah, exactly.
No, I couldn't afford him. Brennan will be on penalties for Forest. He's going to be the goal threat, I think. And we've got West Ham at home. The occasion at the City Ground on Sunday is going to be absolutely tremendous, very emotional. And I saw last season how the City Ground crowd can carry that team to results. Although on paper, that's a tough game. I think the 12th man's going to be a factor, and I think we could get something from that game. We are probably the team in transition more than any other team in the Premier League because we've got so many new players. We might even have another new player in before Sunday. You know, we're being linked to a lot of players. It's going to take 5 or 6 weeks to get any kind of momentum going because of the transition we're going through. So I'm being patient, but we have got good individuals. Nico Williams is a great player. He's going to be integral to the way we play. Jesse Lingard, we've spoken about, of course. And Brennan's a secret at the moment to some extent, but he's not going to be for very long. I think his end product is his key talent. And I think it won't be long before we see a killer pass or more likely a clinical finish that will make people take notice.
Wouldn't surprise me to see Forest get something out of this game on Sunday. Yeah, honestly, I think I wasn't that impressed by West Ham. All right, they were playing against Man City and that's a difficult game. But I thought that West Ham looked like they were a bit at sea in that match at the weekend. And I think Forest, like Mark says, at home, first Premier League game, they are going to be highly up for it. And those fans are going to be fully charged. And I think they might get a result against West Ham at the weekend.
The sucking up continues. Let's talk about transfers now and our plans for the coming week. Myself, Sam and Mark have all made the Haaland transfer. I'm presuming, guys, no one's planning on a -4 going into game week two, Mark?
No, not taking hits at this stage. I am partial to an early hit, but not yet. And I think obviously with the wild card in mind for probably between game weeks 5 and 6, I've got to try and stay patient. The key transfer for me was moving one Spurs to a City asset. It could have been Son to De Bruyne, but I think Kane to Haaland was the right one. And I think elsewhere in my lineup, I'm okay with the team. I like it and I've got to give it time. You know, I picked those players for a reason. And I've got to give them more game weeks. So I think Kane to Haaland was the obvious transfer and I'm happy with the rest of the 11.
Mark, we know quite a lot about Sam and Jules' teams from the previous podcast we've done. Can you quickly run us through some of the rest of your team just so listeners are up to speed with where you're at?
Yeah, so at the weekend, I'll be starting with Ramsdale in goal. I've got Cancelo, Trent, Robertson and Walker. So basically, my defence is purely Liverpool and City. Midfield of Son, Diaz, Saka, Martinelli. And up front, Haaland and Johnson. So in that team, I look at Brennan as the only kind of risk there. Everyone else is an established name in fantasy and in their team. It's made up of a core of 3 City players, 3 Liverpool players and 3 Arsenal players. So it's strong in terms of the players in there and the teams that they're from. So I'm pretty happy with that. It's just the differentials have got to come in for me. Diaz, Saka, these are players who surprisingly don't have high ownership but are exceptional players. So I'm just hoping it falls for me this week.
You also said to me last week that you weren't going for Gabriel Jesus because you felt the other Arsenal attacking options could outscore them. 1 week in, it's early to go, but I texted you after, didn't I? Because I said you've kind of been proven right.
Yeah, I think, you know, neglecting Saka is a surprise. I understand why everyone went to Jesus pre-season because of the goals that he scored. But Saka, it looks like, is going to be on penalties as a first choice. It might rotate to Martinelli. But Saka's their best player, I think, still. I mean, Jesus has made an impact, but I think Saka was their best player last season. I expect him to kick on this season and improve again. And if he does that, he's going to be value at 8 million. So given they're the same price and that Saka gets the extra point for clean sheets and goals, I think for me, he gets the nod. And Jesus is always going to be, it's going to get to 70 minutes and Nketiah is going to be on the bench and Nketiah is going to get some minutes. And you'd think that Jesus off and Nketiah, as we saw at Selhurst Park, is going to be the obvious substitution.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sorry, guys. I did a little bit of a monologue there with Mark, but I was just giving the listeners what they wanted. I thought everyone wants to know Mark's makeup of his team, given his history in FPL. Jules, what about your transfer plans? Are you going to be doing anything, given the fact that your team sounds pretty well set already?
Yeah, no, I'm happy with the team. The good thing about the team, I've got 10 of my 11 starters who are playing home games, which I think is very, obviously, it's important, this is better. So I like the fact that Nico Williams is going to come. I think I'm going to start him for this game because I believe that he can do something well this weekend. So yeah, no, I'm happy with the team. And then that means next week I'll have two free transfers in case I want to change something.
Oh, Sam, I get envy. I hate using a transfer going into game week two because I love the idea that in game week three, you can properly have a tinker. You can make those couple of transfers without a hit.
I can share with you if you want. I'm that kind, you know.
No, even if that was possible, I know you'd offer me it and then say, no, actually, I'm not doing it. But it's not possible. Sam, are you all set? How's your team looking?
I think I'm set, yeah. I wasn't opposed. And I said on our stream on Sunday evening that whilst I'd made a transfer already, and I normally hate doing that going into game week one, protecting team value is really important at this point of the season. I knew I wanted to go for Haaland at some point. Kane was going to drop in price. Haaland was going to rise in price. So it made absolute sense to do it early. But I also wasn't absolutely set that was going to be my only transfer, although I really don't like taking a minus four this early on in the season. I would have done it had something massively kind of turned up during the course of the week. Had there been a new signing, had there been a key injury in training, had there been some team news that said there was a problem with one of my bigger players, I'm still not opposed to taking another hit. But at the moment, I do feel like my team looks nice. Lots of home fixtures in there. Three City in there, three Liverpool in there. And those are the two big teams I think you want to target this week. I don't have any Spurs at the moment, which for me is highly unusual, but I'll rectify that going into game week three.
Let's end on captains, because I'm guessing this week it's going to be a straight shootout between Haaland and Salah. I'm going Haaland. Mark, what are you going?
Well, I haven't got Salah, so I've not given myself that dilemma. So I'm all right. So, it's an easy choice for me. If I had Salah, it's close because obviously the extra points. Salah's got a good record against Palace. I would say, you know, he was wide a lot against Fulham and he could be up against Tyrone Mitchell, who one-on-one is actually one of the best left-backs in the Premier League at shutting down wingers. So I think it'll be a tougher game for Salah again. Robinson did a good job on him at Craven Cottage and I think Mitchell could do a job on him at Anfield. Famous last words, he'd probably get a hat-trick now. So I would favour a City player and that would have to be Haaland at the moment.
And that's Mark manifesting no returns for Salah again because he doesn't own him. We all do own.
Absolute rubbish. Don't buy us whatsoever.
We do all own both Haaland and Salah. Jules, you've got a million premiums, it feels like. Who are you guys captaining, Jules?
I'm not sure. I haven't decided yet between Salah and Haaland. I'll have to wait a little bit and see, go with my gut feeling on Friday afternoon.
Don't get those splinters stuck in your bum from sitting on that fence. Sam, what about you?
No, I'm going to join Jules sitting on the fence. I actually, at the moment, my captain's armband's on Salah and I just have a really good feeling about him against Crystal Palace. I think, you know, he wasn't the best and Liverpool weren't the best. But don't we always see Klopp teams when they don't have the best performance come out and be absolutely brilliant the game week after? He will go at them, a bit like Jules said about Steven Gerrard and his Aston Villa team. Klopp will have been incredibly upset by the performance on Saturday lunchtime against Fulham. I am expecting Liverpool to react in their first game at Anfield this season for the 12th man and the Kop to be in absolute full swing on Monday night in the evening game. And I absolutely love my captain playing in the last game because the hope remains throughout the entire game that it will go well. So I think I'm probably going to captain Salah this week, although the fear of not captaining Haaland is definitely real.
Okay, well, we almost had an answer there. So thanks very much for that. And thank you all for joining me once again. Sam, Jules, I'll see you next week. Mark, thank you as always. Good luck with that team without Salah for the next few weeks. We'll be watching with interest. Are you going to City Ground on Sunday?
I am going to be there. Oh, it's going to be quite emotional. I can't wait for that. And hopefully we come back, or I travel back to London with a point in my pocket. I'll take a point.
You wait for Brennan Johnson to score for him at the weekend.
Yeah, that'll be lovely. I'll take a Brennan goal. Amazing.
We'll enjoy it. Whatever happens, it'll be an amazing occasion, I'm sure. The very best of luck to you all in game week two as well. And of course, good luck to everyone listening. A reminder, the deadline, 11 a.m. on Saturday, the 13th of August. Do not miss it. And of course, do not miss Off the Bench, because that'll be back on Tuesday after Monday Night Football. And it'll be FPL Teach Mode, Andy and Az Phillips from Fantasy Football Scouts and FPL Black Box, who'll be with you. And a reminder, if you haven't, it's not too late to set up a team. You can make those points up from game week one. Just head over to fantasy.premierleague.com, and we'll see you next week. The very best of luck. Bye-bye.